Hello again, my name is Matt Baum, and you are listening to the Ministry of Hemp podcast. And today on the show, we are talking about interstate commerce, imports, and exports. Specifically, you guessed it, the importing and moving of hemp. The 2018 Farm Bill all but decriminalized hemp, removing it from its Schedule 1 drug status and realizing that this is a cannabis plant with less than 0.03% THC, which means it can't get you high, in a nutshell. So, now that hemp is legal, farmers, truckers, and retailers all live in a state of nirvana where we're celebrating hemp and everyone is happy, right? Well, not exactly. Currently, hemp still lives in sort of a gray area while the FDA and USDA figures out how we're going to define it based on how much THC is present, based on what type of isolate is present. There's so much that goes into it. And lucky for us, I found somebody much smarter than me to explain the challenges in something that should be simple, moving hemp around the United States. Meet Frank Robison.
So, you know, my name is Frank Robison. I'm a cannabis attorney. Most of my client base are in the hemp business or in hemp. You know, I have some sort of nexus to the hemp industry at various levels, from growers to processors to entities that make and sell and products. And some of those clients actually are vertically oriented, and they do all of the, you know, they do everything from growth, processing, product development to retail sales. I have been practicing in this area of law for about 7 years. I started practicing with quote unquote cannabis law as, very interestingly, a state of Colorado, University of Colorado attorney. And I was immediately attracted to
Frank's a pretty amazing guy, and he's exactly who we want fighting for hemp in this country. But he also speaks legalese. He's a lawyer, and he's good at what he does. So I will break in here and there during our interview to spell some stuff out, break down some acronyms, and just clarify things a little bit.
As I was advising in the export control space, I would inevitably get questions about importations.
Sure.
And I figured the best way to have a crash course in importations was to become a U.S. customs broker.
Yeah, why not? You got time, right? It's not like you have a full-time job. I mean, go for it.
And so I'm very much of an overachiever in that sort of sense. And so because becoming a customs broker is quite a difficult task to do, between the U.S. Department of Homeland Security background check and the test you take, it's quite a process to become a U.S. customs broker, and the test you take has about a 20% passage rate, where the average bar exam test has, you know, somewhere between 60, maybe 70%.
Okay, so that's 80% failure.
Yes, so you have an 80% failure rate on the U.S. customs broker
Good
test.
Lord,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's very difficult, and it's a highly regulated. It's a highly regulated industry. In fact, it's more regulated, from my perspective, than the legal industry, and it's regulated. And I think that's appropriate, because you have the tools, you have the knowledge, you have the understanding of how to clear products through customs.
Sure.
Code with a specific code, with a code that's associated with any given type of merchandise.
What Frank is saying is it's very hard to import or export anything in this country. And when you add in the fact that you're importing or exporting hemp, a product that has effectively been illegal in the United States for the last 75 years, the USDA and FDA still haven't quite figured out how we're going to do this, it's pretty damn difficult.
FDA has a wide range of views on whether or not it's admissible. And when I say a wide range of views, is the FDA agent in Cincinnati, Ohio, may have a different view than the FDA agent managing the port in Denver, Colorado.
And there's no fixed line or numbers right now. There's no standard. So everybody just sort of is kind of calling their shot?
There is, in a way. So right now what I'm seeing is that they're marching to a beat of the messages that the FDA has communicated to the general public after the stakeholder meeting in Maryland at the end of May.
Okay.
And that is consistent with the farm bill. It's very much consistent with the FDA's view over the past few years. But the message is pretty consistent. CBD is not, so CBD specifically may not be put into food according to the FDA or dietary supplements because it was at the time when the FAQs first came out, it was an investigative new drug. Now it is a drug in the form of Epidiolex.
Right. Now, just recently, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the USDA, approved Epidiolex, which is a cannabidiol or CBD oral solution for the treatment of seizures associated with two severe forms of epilepsy. There were some tests, it's proven to work, but now that means that CBD, it can be considered a pharmaceutical drug. That can complicate things a bit.
And a drug is per se, if included in a food or dietary supplement, an adulterant, and you cannot put adulterants into food or into dietary supplements. In my view, this is an extreme position to be taking, particularly with respect to cannabinoids, including CBD, that are found in whole hemp extract or full spectrum or even broad spectrum. It's when you start, when you start getting closer to isolate, I think that the FDA has an argument that it is similar to Epidiolex and may or may not be permissible to import into the United States or export respectively from the United States to any given country. But again, I just think it's an argument, and in many cases, it's just misguided.
Let me ask you, is it only because in the sense of an isolate, they're saying that this isolate does one thing and therefore the FDA says, well, then it is acting as a drug because it is being applied to do one thing only as opposed to a broad spectrum?
No.
Is it that simple?
The comments that I've seen directly from FDA agents in the field have been more even simple than that. Because it contains CBD, CBD is a drug. A drug is an adulterant when it is included in food or dietary supplements.
Good Lord.
It's not because, it's not because you're making a structure function claim.
Right.
It's not because, you have non-compliant packaging. It's not, it's because
just purely definition. That's it.
It's purely definitional. That is correct. And where I see the seizures happening, it's when it's packaged in a finished form, when it's packaged in a consumer-ready form. Or I also see seizures with respect to isolate. I think that the FDA has an argument. It has, it has an opinion that there's some basis to their argument with respect to dietary supplements and food that are consumer-ready. I disagree with them strongly on many levels. I don't think they have a basis to be seizing isolate. It makes absolutely no sense to me when it's packaged, for example, in a 5 kilo container.
Sure.
And it's labeled for further processing. It's not consumer ready. It could be used for many applications. And if you look at the definition of industrial hemp under the 2018 Farm Bill, it includes any cannabinoid.
Right.
CBD,
right.
Cannabinoid. Cannabinoid is not a scheduled substance. Epidiolex is scheduled. Epidiolex as a drug is scheduled, but it has a specific manufacturing process. It has a specific dose. It's encapsulated. It's a specific product that is intended to treat a specific medical condition. It is extremely, from my perspective, distinct from a sack of isolate, and
right.
It's just not even close to anything like a food product or a supplement product that contains a broad spectrum of
right.
cannabinoids.
We're talking about the difference between
a whole planet.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, the DEA schedules drugs, all drugs, not just illegal drugs, but all of them, into 5 different categories. Number 1 being the most illegal and abusive and addictive. And that's where hemp and marijuana lived for a long time, right alongside heroin and cocaine. The further away you get from one, Schedule 5, for example, where you'll find Pepto-Bismol and acetaminophen and analgesics, stuff like that that people aren't going to abuse. That's probably where Epidiolex is going to live, but don't quote me on this. I'm not certain. So where are these seizures, the seizures you're talking about, are these international seizures or are these national or is it both?
So the seizures that with respect to CBD are always international. So it's either outbound, going out of the United States, or something coming into the United States. Generally, though, I am aware of one seizure that was at a checkpoint I can't remember if it was New Mexico or Southern California, when we had a CBD quote unquote company, just driving near the southern border. CBP had a checkpoint for immigrants.
CBP is the Customs and Border Patrol.
It was focused on immigrants. The pickup truck was full of hemp-based products. The merchandise in that truck was seized, and that was not intended to be exported from the United States. So I am aware of that.
But it's still drugs as far as they're concerned. They're like, oh, it's obviously drugs. They're drug dealers. Stop them.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate when something like that happens, because then all of a sudden, you know, the certain data gets put into a database.
Right.
You know, that tag follows people involved in that transaction for a long time, and that's just not unfair.
It's just not
fair.
Right.
Yeah, it's a deprivation of your constitutional rights,
right.
Particularly, you know, your right to due process, and among others. You have a right to, you know, for a fundamental constitutional right of notice and the opportunity to be heard, and to be seizing a product inside the United States and not providing someone with that right is just, from a lawyer's perspective, it goes back to just the travesty of justice. Why we
sure.
become lawyers. We don't want people to have their property, their life, or their liberty taken
right.
without an opportunity to be heard.
So let me ask you, is the major impediment here, is the major problem the way that the FDA is defining this, or is it more of the way that, say, local law enforcement is carrying out what they feel is their job? Or is it a mixture of both?
With respect to the interstate transport of hemp and hemp products, it's local law enforcement and the fact that the federal government, in my view, has only issued limited guidance. And we're in a period where the federal government hasn't promulgated rules, hasn't conducted work, you know, although they have conducted some, they haven't conducted readily accessible and easily understandable workshops with respect to the 2018 Farm Bill. And I think they're hesitant to do so because regulations haven't been promulgated. That said, regulations are pursuant to my understanding, imminent. And when I say imminent, I'm talking this fall or early winter
oh, wow.
of 2019.
Oh, that that's fantastic.
Yeah. It has been moved up from its original. It's going to take about a year to do I think the last I heard was something in September or October should be provided, so some sort of emergency rulemaking should be enacted by then.
And at that point, there'll be an education that is basically handed down to law enforcement. So when you do pull someone over with hemp flour, you know, or hemp stocks, they can say, here is our process, here's what we do, here's the way we should test it. I mean, is that all in there?
Hopefully, that's to be seen. And so what we could see, and again, at the local level, what we could see, so just, you know, distinguishing it from the conversation, the parallel conversation we're having about the international seizures and the international issues that we're seeing with the import and export of hemp, which is an agricultural commodity.
Right.
In any event, we'll set that aside. But that's also applicable to the local local issues.
Absolutely.
But hopefully, in the regulatory process, you'll see something about testing standardization. In field testing, but you might not. We may not see that, and that might come down through informal policy statements. That might come down through educational workshops. That might not come down at all, because states have a right to regulate hemp more stringently than they do than the federal government than the 2018 Farm Bill. That says they do not have the right to impede the interstate transport of hemp, and so you might see some confusion. Because there's two provisions within the 2018 Farm Bill that should be easy to understand, but may not be easy to understand for people that, you know, want to consider hemp marijuana, which it's not hemp, and marijuana is marijuana. But it should be easy to understand that states may have legal frameworks that are more strict than the 2018 Farm Bill, but they are not under any circumstance allowed to restrict the interstate transport of hemp. And so how that unfolds is to be seen, as you mentioned, as you questioned. Whew. Hopefully that is clarified through rulemaking. I fear that it will not be, and it will be clarified through court cases.
Of course.
Legal actions.
Of course. Because there's going to be holdouts. There's going to be people that say, I don't care, you're not bringing marijuana through my state. And
judicial precedent. Exactly.
And you can say as many times as you want, it's not marijuana.
Yes.
But until they can sit down and listen.
And hopefully they listen to the industry and industry stakeholders about testing procedures, uniform testing procedures in the field, if any. And when I say if any, I think that it's appropriate that so long as the state of origin that has a agricultural pilot program, as they're called today, under the 2014 Farm Bill, or a agricultural a plan under 2018 Farm Bill, so long as they have appropriate documentation from the state that complies with the state law and regulations, indicating that the hemp shipment is compliant with that program or plan respectively, then local law enforcement shouldn't be allowed to test it in the field because there is so much variance between the tests. I mean, it can even vary from the same piece of machinery to the same piece of machinery, the same testing technology, because the way the machine is calibrated or because of the understanding of the user of the machine is lacking. They might not understand how to use such a sophisticated piece of machinery. That said, there are people developing field tests that are supposedly quite accurate, but again, these are things that, in my view, we're putting a risk between point A and point B, point A being the country where the hemp is grown, point B where the hemp is lawful to possess, manufacture, process. Let's just use an example from Kentucky to Colorado.
Sure.
You were putting in the hands of local law enforcement between all those states, between Kentucky and Colorado, the potential to misapply from my perspective, should be clear federal law. Compliant hemp grown compliantly, products derived from hemp grown compliantly, shouldn't be stopped, shouldn't give rise to legal jeopardy for anybody, much less for a guy that's getting paid $5,000 to truck it, from point A to point B. It's absolutely unconscionable that an individual like that would spend time in jail.
Now, let me ask you, which do you think is more difficult right now, importing hemp from out of the country and bringing it in, or just moving hemp within the U.S.?
It depends on the form. And ironically, when we're talking about flour, I think the import and export of flour is relatively straightforward.
Really?
The interstate transport of flour is relatively complex because it looks like, it smells like, it smells like its cousin, or we'll just call it a distant cousin, to make sure.
Distant cousin, yeah.
Hemp is not marijuana. But in any event, to local law enforcement, it looks the same.
Right.
I think most CBP people that haven't, that work with CBP at this point understand that hemp is not marijuana, and there are ways to demonstrate and document that it is not so. And that said, getting back to the, switching gears, I know we're bouncing back and forth between the interstate issues and the international issues. International issues really, come into play with, as we were talking about earlier, with consumer-ready products, products that are packaged for consumers that have CBD listed as an ingredient.
Right.
And whether or not it's a subset of the within the ingredient list, when I say subset, it says something like whole hemp extract, and then it says something like parenthetical. CBD, CBN, terpenes, or it just says CBD. Products of that nature are quite regularly being seized.
Let me ask you a question.
And again, go ahead.
If you go to Amazon.com right now and you search CBD, There are thousands of hits that you will get.
It's amazing.
And I mean, most of it is garbage. A lot of it even says it's made with stems and whatnot, which isn't even how you do it. How is Amazon selling all these products? And a lot of them look like from Chinese sellers. They have to be importing that stuff, right? So
people are selling, you know, a bill of, you know, sale to Amazon, and Amazon's buying it. I am very well aware of many, many entities that are selling that it's, you know, it's derived from stock
right.
and sterile seeds. I look at these products on a regular basis.
And it's garbage.
I'm aware of Amazon. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's pure garbage. I mean, it's just fake.
Yeah. Well, it's either, if it is made from stock and cereal seeds, it's a very low quality, as you say, garbage product, or they're just plain and simply misrepresenting.
Right.
And then it's made from flour and they're getting it on Amazon, and that's their marketing shtick. And doing that would run afoul with Amazon's policies. Amazon's policies do state, seller's policies do state that you cannot sell product from cannabis flour. I don't remember the exact verbiage. It's been a minute or more since I read the policy, but it's something along the lines of you can't sell flour. You are able to sell products derived from stock and sterile seed. So people read the policy and then they market their product according to their policy in order to get it approved on Amazon.
So let me ask you, does that mean Amazon is, in your opinion, I'm not saying let's damn them to hell, but does that mean Amazon is actively promoting the sale of a product that is completely bunk, basically?
I don't think so. I think the better way to say that would be that the sellers that are on Amazon understand Amazon's policy and they're using it to their advantage to make sales.
So it's a bad policy and the sellers are using it, basically.
Yes. I don't know if I want to call it a bad policy. I think it's a, you know, I don't think it's a surprising policy given the FDA's rhetoric on CBD products, which I think is really, I think is one of the more, you know, unfortunate things that's going on in the background of this wonderful moment of the 2018 Farm Bill.
Right.
Where hemp was descheduled as it should have been, you know, 45, 50 years ago yeah. or more. It never should have been. Well, let's just say ever.
Right.
Because never should have been scheduled, but in any event, it has been. It's been long overdue, the descheduling of hemp, and Amazon has a policy that predates the 2018 Farm Bill that focuses in on the stock and sterile seed component of the definition of marijuana under the Controlled Substances Act, and people understand the policy and they navigate accordingly. And you know, is that Amazon's? You know, is Amazon, you know, the customer, you know, it's seller police? I don't think that's their responsibility.
No. And they're playing it safe. Obviously, they can look, yeah. they don't want this stuff seized. They want to make money on it. And if they do it yeah. this way, it doesn't get seized. They're happy, even though it might not be the best product.
I think they need to believe they're sellers too. I mean, I don't think they're in a position where they can quote unquote police, you know, what their sellers are selling. I mean, they need to rely upon the representations that their sellers are making. If someone makes a misrepresentation, I don't think that it would be fair to put the burden on Amazon to go check, you know, the traceability, the lot traceability of those stocks and seeds, for
sure,
example.
Sure.
I mean, that would be an undue burden on a company like Amazon. That said, if they did, you know, pursuant to their policy, that product should probably be removed.
Yeah.
But again, I think the policy is unfortunate. I think that
we should embrace
products that are made from cannabis, hemp flowers.
Right. It's a bad policy. I mean, that's what it comes
down
to.
I think it's a bad policy, but nevertheless, it's their policy.
Right. And they're doing
it. They have the right to make a policy.
Jeff Bezos has to cover his butt. I get it. You know.
Yeah. I don't know if it's covering their butt, but I mean, maybe it's a matter of not having updated the policy since the 2018 Farm Bill, or maybe it's a matter of not wanting to update the policy until the FDA clarifies the waters that it's muddy.
Exactly. Okay, let me ask you one more question on this. What is the one thing that could change tomorrow that makes your job easier as an importer, exporter, moving stuff around in interstate commerce? What's the one thing that you would like to see change?
Can I give one on both sides of the fence,
guys? Absolutely, absolutely. Please,
okay.
Please.
So the one thing on the international import and export of goods that I would like to see changed is that the FDA would acknowledge that CBD that is found in a whole hemp extract is a distinct compound is distinct, from CBD in the form of Epidiolex. It is just quite simply not the drug,
right?
Epidiolex. And that to me is bluntly a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. If you look at the World Health Organization, so the World Anti-Doping Association almost 2 years ago deemed CBD not to be a regulated substance. The World Health Organization has deemed whole hemp extracts and cannabis and CBD in particular not to pose a public health issue. And so you take issues like very established credible international bodies, and you also look at the difference between Epidiolex and what people are putting into food or supplement like products. I mean, it's night and day. It's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
I mean, so on one hand, you have a benign substance. Many entities aren't putting that CBD isolate, even if we did agree with the fact that CBD isolate in itself was the same thing, assuming for the sake of argument that CBD isolate is substantially equivalent to the drug Epidiolex. I mean, that's not what people are putting into.
Exactly.
That's not what many stakeholders are putting into their products.
Exactly.
They're putting in whole hemp extract, full spectrum type oils. And so I would like to see some sort of FDA rhetoric on that, so that customs and the FDA officials that work with customs on a regular basis don't seize products that are packaged for retail human consumption. It just doesn't, from my perspective, make sense. So long as that product is compliant with the laws of country of importation.
Sure.
And so you have products being seized that are being exported from the United States that are perfectly compliant with the country of importations laws. And that's just crazy. It's causing people to endure costs to clarify those situations with customs. And so to get back to your question, some sort of simple clarification with respect to products that are containing whole hemp, full spectrum extracts. That said, I don't think, from a practical perspective, the FDA is willing to go all the way to isolates, but I would like to see that as well. I think it's in the range of things that they, should feel comfortable doing, clarifying their view on whole hemp extracts.
Right. So what about here at home?
Interstate. I'm sorry, go.
Oh, so what about here at home, interstate?
So, interstate here at home, clear guidance. That said, we saw fairly clear guidance statement from the General Counsel of the United States Department of Agriculture, which was very welcome, approximately, I would think at this point, 2 months ago. I don't know the date off the top of my head. That letter, that opinion from the General Counsel of the United States Department of Agriculture was about 5 months overdue, but to his credit, it came. He clarified certain issues. I would like to see additional clarification with respect to the interstate transport of hemp and hemp-based products come out of the United States Department of Agriculture to ensure that nobody ever sees another day in jail because of a misunderstanding,
right,
at the local law enforcement
level. Because of a completely legal substance. It's like arresting someone for moving corn.
It's like arresting someone for moving soybeans or corn. Yeah,
exactly.
That's correct. Or even let's go to a product that has a high concentration of terpenes. Let's go to perhaps Echinacea, St. John's wort.
Sure.
Mint. I mean, products like this. So just very frustratingly at the local level, a field test is a litmus test. It's very much akin to a pregnancy test. It's mm-hmm. either you're pregnant or you're not.
Right.
And what triggers a field test is not only the presence of THC, though that does trigger a field test, but it also can be the presence of other cannabinoids and the presence of terpenes that are commonly found in cannabis. And so all of a sudden you're using a field test that is inherently unreliable to field test products, hemp and other hemp products, in the field. And the local law enforcement is using that positive, litmus pregnancy test to establish probable cause.
Right.
And probable cause should not be established to search and seize anyone's merchandise for an inherently unreliable field test for an agricultural commodity.
Not to mention
agricultural commodities could also trigger it.
Right. And not to mention the fact that we're asking the Highway Patrol to be chemists at the same time. Like, this is not their job.
We're not.
This is not what they do.
We want them. And that gets back to a point we were talking about earlier, which I think is the way to address this issue, is to rely upon the state of where they
are. Frank and I wandered off on a few tangents after this, but it was wonderful to talk to him. And it's one of those things you don't think about. There was a recent case in Oklahoma with a trucker that was pulled over and arrested for hauling hemp and spent 4 weeks in jail. And the good news is, Frank has some good news about that. I can't talk about it yet because there's something that's going to happen next week, but we'll revisit that on the show. I want to thank him so much for coming on here. And thank you to everybody that's been listening to the show and calling us with your questions. You can always call us and leave us a message at 402-819-6417 and leave us your hemp-related question. We answer them right here on the show. My buddy Kit and I just did it last week, and we're going to do it again soon. If you dig what you've heard here, please leave us a rating or write us a review even. It really helps to make the show more discoverable for people that are looking for this information. And it also makes me feel pretty good because I produce this whole thing. You can find us on Twitter at Ministry of Hemp, on Facebook /Ministry of Hemp, and you can always email me, Matt@ministryofhemp.com, with any of your questions or anything you'd like to hear or even some creative criticism. I'd just like to hear from you, the listeners. For now, this is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp saying take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will you? This is the Ministry of Hemp Podcast, signing off.